And that is appropriate. Once the plan is complete, there will be no more need for them.
What will you do with them then?
I have chosen not to decide yet. Perhaps I will destroy them. Perhaps I will remove them to their own land until their bodies wear out. It does not matter. They will be happy with whatever I decide.
Then what? You, me, and the handful of other slave sorcerers who survived the global extermination spend the next eternity getting drunk and remembering the good old days when the concept of days mattered.
Then,
the Lich said, cupping his hands and gazing into them,
a new people will replace them.
To worship you, I suppose.
In part. And why not? I will have the power of a god. In some ways more. For I will have done more for them than any of the gods ever has.
But that isn't the main reason.
Vanity drives men to make accomplishments because they know they will die and be forgotten. I face neither fate, and have thus set vanity aside. Do you know what the centuries have shown me? That all people of all times yearn to kill one another. To destroy everyone that is not of their kind. That they have not done so is not out of their goodness, but only because they have lacked the means. So I will stop them before they achieve that end, by binding them to me, and by making them all as one people, united, with no urge to fall upon one another, even if the day comes that I pass from this world.
Dante took a moment to attempt to conceive this. Just everyone the same, from one shore to the other, in the mountains and the deserts and the coasts, on every continent of the world.
Is it not worth it for peace, for harmony? A single religion, a single mode of thought, all of the world united at last. The gods have cursed us with differences, with so many ideas that a mind can never hold them all, and shatters beneath their contradictions, trying in vain to make sense of what is around them. I will liberate them from the burden of thought, for all will be answered, and people may, at last, move forward in serenity.
But you can't just demand they all think the same thing. The struggle toward truth is the core of what makes us human.
What happens when all questions have been answered and all truths delivered? The righteousness lies not in the struggle, little sorcerer. Why do you resent the thought of others living in enlightened unity? Is it because you hold yourself superior to them? Do you believe that only you have the clarity of mind to seek and discover that which is right? What flaw in you makes you yearn for others to suffer?
Dante shook his head, but all he found inside himself were simple denials, devoid of any conviction. I just don't like the idea of making people think a certain way. Let them follow their own paths. In some ways, the journey's more important than the conclusion.
It is for their own good. And they will be happier for it.
The Lich tilted his massive head.
Do you not understand? You find this idea so dangerous because it is so beguiling. You claim to seek truth, yet when it stands before you at last, you reject it.
Why are you even trying to convince me of this? You don't have any doubts about it, do you? Once I'm under your power, neither will I. So why not just belich me already, so that I'll agree with your every word? The White Lich laughed again, the icy planes of his face looking like they might crack away.
Because there is so much more pleasure in bringing you to understand that you have been fighting for the cause of suffering and extinction. Abandon it now. Pledge yourself to the glory of peace. Let your last act as a mortal man be the first moral choice of your existence. That is my gift to you.
For just a moment, Dante didn't know what he would say. Then it burst forth in a torrent. You claim to bring them peace by making them all one people. But even that isn't good enough, is it? Because within that people, they'll still be individuals, pursuing their own goals and dreams. Which means there will be struggles, conflicts, maybe even wars. So the only way to solve that is to take away their ability to be individuals, with their own minds and mouths, their own thoughts and speech.
But it goes deeper than that, doesn't it? You don't only want to silence them to stop them from hurting each other. You want to shut them up because you're afraid that if they get the chance to speak, they'll prove you wrong. And then your whole great quest collapses into ashes.
Dante smiled bitterly. You say you'll bring them peace, harmony, unity. And in exchange, all they have to give up is everything. The giant didn't look the slightest bit upset by Dante's rebuke.
We have spent enough time on words. It is time to put you to use. I have thought about sending you to kill your friends. That would be amusing. But I want them gone, and your victory over them would not be assured. Instead, I will send you away and see if they follow you. They might not care to, and that would be amusing in its own way. But I think that they will. In doing so, they will abandon the city of Eris Ossus to me. And once I have absorbed its people to myself, it will no longer matter what your friends do. Although, I expect that they will have already died fighting you.
You can't do this. Dante activated his loon. Yes. Narin answered at once. Sounded urgent. Dante, where are you? You may have captured me, Dante said to the Lich. You might turn me into one of your pet nethermancers, but my friends will find you. They'll kill you. And whatever you try to do to me, I'll fight back. I'll break free. I'll... The Lich lifted his left hand, curling his fingers. Light seeped through Dante's skin in little droplets, pooling there, and then streaming towards the Lich in white threads. Dante's body went ice cold. He was still breathing, but he didn't seem to be getting any air. Sound roared in his eyes, drowning out the beating of his heart. He grasped at the nether, but he might as well have been trying to grab a cloud. For as much as he was afraid, he was just as surprised. Somehow, until that very moment, he had assumed that he'd find a way to escape, or resist, or even talk the White Lich out of it. In the bedrock of his soul, he had always told himself that he would never let himself be made a slave. He had been wrong. 13. Blaze awoke to two sensations, neither of them pleasant. The first was a most violent hangover, which he recalled being extremely well-earned. And the second was that of being shaken about by some utter prick who was about to learn that he who wakes a hungover man is he whose balls are about to be booted up into his body cavity. He slapped away Naren's hand.
Naren, you monster! Unless the White Lich himself is here to defile my soul, you can stuff it up your ass and keep it there until noon. On second thought, make that 4 o'clock.
Get up, Naren said. I don't care how much pain you've put yourself in. Get up, Mr. Buckler!
There was a shakiness to the captain's voice that made sweat pop out across Blaze's body. Something had gone wrong. That in itself was no cause for alarm, to say nothing of rousting a man from bed like a brute. Over the last 15-odd years, Blaze had experienced enough things going wrong that he now considered it unusual when things weren't falling to shit. But he knew at once that this was very, very different. He sat up, wincing at the brightness of the sunlight through the windows.
What is it? Dante has been taken.
What?
When? I believe it happened last night. He went missing then, and I couldn't contact him. But I didn't know what had happened until just a minute ago.
Why didn't you tell me about this hours ago?
I made an attempt to wake you. It failed, as someone was too drunk. I don't believe it was me.
Blaze had fallen asleep in his clothes, meaning he only had to find his sandals and swords. The blades were leaned against the head of the bed in easy grabbing range, the same place he always left them. It was good to know that, even after a solid gallon of what passed for Tenerian beer, he was still able to remember what was important in life. But one of his sandals was missing. He moved toward the other room, meaning to steal one of Gladick's.
Who thieved him? The monsoon.
Naren trailed after him.
That's possible. But whoever took him, he's now in the hands of the White Lich.
Blaze froze with Gladick's sandal halfway onto his foot.
Naren, please tell me you're joking. And that this is a well-deserved punishment for my dereliction of duty.
Last night, Dante forged a new loon so he and I could keep up with each other's patrols. Since last night, I've tried to contact him repeatedly without success. Not 5 minutes ago, he pulsed me. It was clear that he was talking to someone else, but that he wanted me to hear their conversation.
Naren described what he'd heard. It wasn't much.
There can be no doubt that he was speaking to the Aiden Rane, and that the enemy meant to convert Dante into a lesser lich under his command.
A wave of immense smallness passed over Blaze.
Do we know if the lich has succeeded yet?
Based on the last noises I heard before the loon went dead, I would assume he's enacting the process right now.
Then we have to go stop him.
The lich is likely to be hours away from here. The transformation of the Blighted is nearly instant.
I'm afraid there is no way to get there in time.
We still have to try.
Naren kept his voice low. We don't know where he is, Blaze. Even if we did, we'd have to face off against the White Lich. And this time, we would do so without Dante's help. Or Gladix. The two of us wouldn't stand a chance.
Blaze sank to a crouch, hands pressed to the sides of his head. 100 ideas swirled across his mind, but most of them were stupid, or useless visions of cutting the White Lich's fat, stupid head off. Except the Lich bled this ghastly white stuff. It wouldn't even spray in a properly satisfying...
Blaze jerked up his head.
Dante made a loon for you. To replace the one he and Jonah had been using, which broke yesterday. Your loon has his blood on it.
Blaze sprinted to the other room. Gladick was asleep or unconscious in his bed, his pale shins looking like the trunks of birch saplings.
Gladick! Wake up, you old son of a bitch!
Naren glared at him.
He is recovering from his fall. Show some decency. If he doesn't get up, the only thing I'll show him is the back of my hand. Gladick!
He grabbed the old man's jabat, which was perfectly clean, having replaced the blood-stained one he'd been wearing during his topple from the tower, and gave him a good shake.
Open your eyes, you prick! Wake up and do some good for once in your miserable life!
Gladick's head lolled, then snapped forward. He opened his eyes, the whites of which had gone faintly yellow. He made a clicking noise in his throat.
Blaze kept a tight grip on the front of his jabat.
Gladick? Are you in there?
I... live.
Yes, and we're all very upset about that. Do you remember what happened?
The tower. I was on top of it, watching over all of the world. And then...
He narrowed his eyes to slits, then bared his teeth and shook his head.
I cannot remember. Everything is blank.
His mouth fell open. He fixed his eyes on Blaze.
Wait. There is more.
Yes?
I was fishing.
Blaze gave a grunt of laughter.
I think you cracked your skull. You weren't fishing, you were falling. The difference is that fishing involves a line and some fish, whereas falling involves breaking parts of you and the occasional splattering.
I was at Ordemer Stream, outside of Fall Hedge. That is the village where I spent my childhood. I was at the stream, and it was vital that I catch enough trout, for my father was sick in bed and my mother had died the year before, and my younger sisters would have no dinner except what I brought home. It was close to winter, and the leaves were falling in the water, and the sun was about to go down, and I was cold. But I stayed until I caught my fourth fish, and then I walked home. And although it was dark and I was frightened, I was proud, too, because that night my sisters would not go hungry.
What's this? A memory of yours?
It was more than a memory. I experienced it in perfect clarity, as though I were living it anew. Do you not see?
Blaze snapped his fingers.
You died, didn't you? What you saw was the past lands.
I believe so. Yet if I was dead, how can I be here now? Breathing. Speaking. Questioning.
Because apparently Dante is a miracle worker. You'll have to thank him for that. Except you can't, because the White Lich took him.
Gladick's mouth fell open again, eyes gleaming in horror. It was an expression Blaze wouldn't have thought him capable of.
But how?
Blaze and Naren explained what little they knew. During this, Gladick closed his eyes. Winky little pieces of light flowed down his body. When he finished and opened his eyes again, his face looked somewhat less haunted, meaning it appeared to only be housing 4 or 5 ghosts instead of a full dozen. Blaze's head hurt, but he hardly felt it as he paced about.
The Lich might have stolen Dante, but we can find him. We've got some of his blood. We need you to open a connection between it and the rest of the blood sloshing around in his body and use that to track him down.
And then what?
If he has been converted into Lichdom, he will be utterly loyal to the Aiden Rane. He will attempt to destroy us on sight.
When we left, Era said that there's a way to reverse being blighted. Maybe there's a way to de-lich somebody, too.
You are suggesting we return to the Silent Spires? Learn if there is indeed a method to undo what has been done? Then chase Dante down and apply this method to him?
Unless you think we can slap it out of him.
You are made foolish by your passions. You don't understand what this course of action will lead to.
Saving our friend from being used against us, teaming up with him to rip the Lich into glowing white confetti, and then being thrown a countrywide party by the grateful locals.
It is 3 days from here to the Hell-Painted Hills, then 1 to 2 more days to reach the Silent Spires. Even if the law you seek is real and can be conveyed to us instantly, it will be 5 to 7 days before we can even begin the hunt for Dante.
I think he'll forgive us for not being able to violate the laws of nature and time to get to him sooner.
Gladick had been seated on his bed. He stood, pre-wincing, and then looking mildly surprised at the apparent lack of pain.
During that time span, short as it seems, the Aiden Rane will invade Eris Ossus. We will not be here to defend it, and it will fall. In a single stroke, the Lich will double both the size of his army and his personal power. After that, there will be no fighting him.
I don't care. We're going to find Dante, and we're going to save him.
This might well be the Aiden Rane's very plan.
Entice us to depart the city and then claim it once there is nothing left to threaten him. We cannot fall into his trap.
We're not going to fall into any trap. We're going to jump into it.
Gladick shuffled to the glass door and flung it open to the balcony. He swept his hand across the towers of the city.
You would sacrifice all of these people for this, along with our only real chance to kill the Aiden Rane, a chance we have spent everything preparing for, that Dante was fighting for. And you would do all this on the possibility that we might learn a way to undo what has been done?
Yes! Yes, gods damn you, I would!
But what is the point? You would save your friend only to lose the world. How can we kill the Lich if we give this up?
Blaze crossed to him in a blink, jabbing his finger at Gladick's face.
Do you know how many times he and I have done the impossible? I don't, because I stopped keeping track after it hit triple digits. We'll get him back, and we'll find a way to win. Just like we always do.
Gladick looked away with a grimace, exposing his worn teeth.
How can you throw so much away like this?
Because he would do the same for me.
The look that came to Gladick's face contained a blend of sadness, envy, and resolution.
Very well. We will abandon the city and travel to the Silent Spires. But I ask one thing of you.
What's that?
Pray that we are making the right decision.
Blaze clapped his hands and dashed to the other room to gather up his things. He was getting his pack laced up before he understood what he was feeling. Gratitude. Toward Gladick.
Giving a hard boot to such unwelcome thoughts, he walked over to the old bastard, who was searching about for a second sandal. Blaze jerked his thumb toward the other room.
Have you given any thought to Volo? I'm not sure she's well enough to travel. Think we're better off leaving her here?
A fleeting look of pity crossed Gladick's face.
You still fail to see the consequences of your course. If you leave young Volo here, she will die along with all the others at the Lich's hand.
Blaze rocked back on his heels, swearing loudly.
Then she's coming with us.
And if she is still unable to care for herself when we reach for the hills? For the sake of our own lives, we cannot allow ourselves to be slowed down.
Blaze met the old man's eyes. I know what you're trying to do.
Do you think I'm a newcomer to hard decisions?
Gladick watched him a moment, then smiled and returned to his search. Consulting with Beck, they decided the knight was sound enough to travel with them, and would also be better off stashed away at the Silent Spires. While they saw to their arrangements, Narin dashed off to the docks to warn Jonah and the Sword of the South to be ready to flee the city at the first sign of invasion. All told, they were ready to go in less than an hour. Knowing that it would only touch off a ruckus, Blaze almost left the tower without telling a single Tenarian soul. At the end, though, he wrote a simple note and left it in their quarters. He included the suggestion that the Erisians might flee the city and scatter in all directions. He doubted they'd take his advice. The five of them assembled on the shore. Volo could walk on her own, as long as you sort of prodded her along as you went, but she needed help getting into the canoe, and was obviously not going to provide any help navigating, obliging Blaze to take the seat in the fore. He took them west, toward the hole Dante had opened in the wall the day before. It was early enough in the morning that the laborers were just now showing up to patch it up with boards. Blaze smiled and waved politely as they passed through the gap.
This isn't the first time I've said this, but this time really isn't our proudest moment.
Narin lifted an eyebrow.
They're probably all about to die, and you're joking about it.
Blaze tightened his grip on the paddle.
If it is any consolation, Gladick said, most of them will not die. They will become blighted.
Blaze frowned.
I think you may have discovered a new form of anti-consoling.
As they neared the end of the clear water, the forest rising before them, he turned around for a last glimpse of Aerys Ossus. Gladick leaned forward and touched him on the shoulder.
Do not look back at it. It is already gone.
The pleasant thing about the swamp was that if you wanted to put a city behind you, all it took was a few minutes of boating into the trees. The unpleasant thing about the swamp was that as soon as you got away from the city, you were faced with nothing but a lot of fetid muck, swarms upon swarms of flies, and long, squiggly things that seemed personally invested in killing you. Nobody said much for the first 2 miles. Blaze had noticed that was very common at the start of trips. Initial silence, as though no one wanted to disturb the extremely sensitive business of repeatedly shoving a paddle in the water, or letting your horse trot along, or what have you, followed by the realization of just how long you were going to be out there, and that if you didn't fill some of the time with talking, you would probably soon be murdering each other instead. After a bit of discussing directions with Beck, Gladick lifted his head.
Where is the object that contains Galan's blood?
Narin unclipped his loon from his ear and handed it over.
It lies within this. Gledek turned the hunk of bone jewelry in his hand. One of his foolish earrings? Why would he bleed on it? He bleeds on everything, Blaze said. Haven't you noticed I don't like to stand within 3 feet of him? I had assumed that was because he had noticed your odor and ordered you to keep your distance.
Despite himself, Blaze snorted.
My blood is on that as well, Naren said, in case that's relevant.
Gladik eyed them as if he found them unspeakably barbaric.
This is an ethereal object, yes? And not merely a piece of shadow-worshipping degenerate iconography? It doesn't matter, Blaze said. Now get your face into that blood and get to work.
He could feel Gladik bringing the nether to him, manipulating it in a cold way that was practical, yet elegant. Sometimes the old man whispered to himself, as if he'd forgotten where he was, or was too mad and senile to care. After 20 minutes of this, and entirely without warning, Gladik shot halfway to his feet, crying out in pain. Blaze ducked lower to stop the boat from rolling back and forth.
What are you doing, you crazy idiot? Looking to feed the Zikioko?
Gladik rubbed his forehead with his palm.
I believe I have discovered how this process works. With its aid, I have successfully located Captain Naren.
Blaze chuckled, swooping his paddle through the water.
Then you possess the eldritch power of sight. At last, I understand why Dante was so eager to team up with you.
The priest returned to his whispers. In less than a minute, he snapped his fingers.
I have found the correct signal. Dante lives.
Relief warmed Blaze's veins like a good stout.
How far away? As my prior experience is limited to locating a man seated immediately before me, I cannot say. The signal is not terribly strong, but it points somewhere to our northeast.
Keep an eye on it, figuratively speaking.
We'll want to know if the Lich sends him off somewhere else. Such as after us.
That thought hadn't occurred to Blaze. He didn't like it. He paddled until he'd sweated off his hangover, then passed the tool over to Naren and took a nap. It was a muggy day, with little wind, and Blaze was happy when it came to an end. They found a nice little island where Blaze helped lift Volo from the canoe. He thought he saw a glimmer of light in her eye, but it was gone so fast, he couldn't be sure. The trees fell away. The hell-painted hills lifted before them, threatening and stark. The swamps, for once, had been perfectly uneventful. Over the last 2.5 days, Dante seemed to have been traveling slowly northwest, but Gladik had no way to know how far or for what purpose. After taking a long look around to get his bearings, Blaze headed north, meaning to find the exact spot where they'd crossed the border before. He found the location a mile later, but his self-congratulations on bringing them to it were short-lived. The goat-like Lawn Harbor were nowhere to be seen. He beached the canoe on a grassy shore connected to the barren hills, silently cursing Dante for not having thought to give Era a loon. Then again, Dante would have still been in possession of that loon, leaving them stuck in the exact same position. He jerked his chin at Gladig.
I don't suppose you have any neat tricks to get hold of Era and ask her to please send out the giant goats.
Gladik's eyes shifted back and forth as he surveyed the slag countryside.
None that would work. You can't send a dead pigeon with a note tied around its neck. It would not be delivered. When Dante sent his minions toward the spires, they ceased to function as soon as they crossed the borders. Felled by the Odosein. You could send pigeon after pigeon, until someone sees one falling and wanders over to check on what's going on with all the suicidal pigeons.
Even if successful, it would take longer than we would on our own. There is also the matter that none of the people at the spires can read.
I never thought illiteracy would come back to bite anyone in the ass. Blaze planted his hands on the small of his back.
Beck, are you any help here?
The knight shook his head.
I've only travelled through the hell-painted hills twice, once to begin my training, and once to end it.
Then it sounds like we're travelling by foot wagon.
Blaze clucked his tongue.
Bolo, how's that sound, hey?
She didn't so much as look his way. He sighed.
Guess we'll have to carry her. We shall do no such thing,
Gladick said.
What? You think we're better off trying to roll her? In the state she's in, she can hardly walk down a paved road by herself. She could never make it through the hills.
Then she is a burden we cannot allow to slow us down. You sacrificed the city of Aerisosis for this, Blaze Buckler. You may have sacrificed everything for it. I will not endanger our mission for the sake of a single soul.
The two men stared at each other. Blaze had that feeling where you really wanted to pick something up and hit something else with it, which was never a great indicator of the rightness of one's position. Even with help from Naren and the still-recovering Beg, would he really be able to carry Volo all that way? Up the slopes, over the crags, all without slowing them down and risking being blighted themselves?
We could leave her here for now, he said,
hating the words and himself.
I don't think she's in any danger of wandering off.
Naren gaped.
Are you mad? She may not wander off, but she won't feed herself either, nor defend herself from attacks by people or animals.
We can hide her. If we send someone back with Lawn Harbors the instant we get to the spires, she won't be alone more than 3 days.
She won't be alone at all, because I will stay with her.
We should have sent her with the Sword of the South, Blaze muttered, but I kept thinking she'd get better.
There is no hand waiting to pull us from the depths of our troubles,
Gladick said.
No guarantee of progress, nor better days. The Aeden Rane may be the only one of us whose fate is not the slow disintegration of body and mind.
With inspirational sermons like that, I can see how you went so far in the priesthood.
Blaze shook Naren's hand.
We'll send someone for you as soon as we get there. If you haven't heard from us in a week, you should probably assume Bel Era got fed up with our endless problems and fed us to the goats.
I will find my way, Naren said.
Good luck on yours.
Without ceremony, Blaze, Gladick, and Beck hiked up into the hills. The heat of the day glowed from the rocks. If not for the steady wind blowing off them, it would have been unbearable. At the top of the first ridge, Blaze stopped to look back the way they'd come in, shielding his eyes. Naren and Volo were seated beneath a tree. Blaze had a sudden pang that he wouldn't see them again. He turned around and hiked on. He soon learned that Beck wasn't much for talking. Gladick certainly was, but Blaze was not especially interested in hearing what he had to say, as Gladick seemed afflicted with such an exuberance of bile that he couldn't open his mouth without disgorging a stream of it. This was unfortunate, as it left Blaze alone with his thoughts. Such as the idea that Era might not know how to reverse Dante's condition, or that she would claim that there was no way to reverse it. In that case, where could they go to find that knowledge? Bressel, Narashtovik, or the Hukali Islands would be the usual bets. All were centers of scholasticism, and he knew exactly where they were. But these were also places where lichcraft was, as far as he knew, unknown, and hence would be unlikely to know fuck all about it. What was the alternative? Race off in a random direction in the hopes that whoever they ran into over there would know what to do? How much time would they have to search for answers before the White Lich just sort of consumed everything? Blaze had a strong tan going, but he'd have been burned to cinders if not for Gladick's regular applications of ether, which restored their skin to its previous state. Night fell, and they marched on, aided by a floating ball of light and the nether that kept their muscles fresh. They slept through the deepest part of the night, only allowing themselves a few hours before continuing on. A summer storm blew in around noon. The hiss of the rain on the rocks was a welcome break from the heat, but it was not so welcome that the rocks were now all slick and wet, happy to fling the three occupiers down their skin-removingly hostile slopes. Steam rose like a pot of boiling water. In a way, the wet landscape reminded him of the fingers of Pocket Cove, except the hell-painted hills didn't even have moss and shrubs to break up the monotony of blank rock. It was odd that his memory of the fingers made him smile, considering the time in question had involved dodging 3-foot-long centipedes while he'd been completely naked as part of a bizarre nether training exercise. Yet it seemed as though the addition of time transformed many of the bitter periods of his life into his better memories. Such as when he and Dante had first fled Bressel while being chased by lunatic Aronites. Not so much fun when it had been taking place, but in hindsight, they'd mostly just caught and eaten a lot of fish, and nothing particularly bad had come of it. Or when the two of them had tried to convince the maddeningly obstinate Norrin to quit fighting each other, only for those same Norrin to trick them into that ridiculous quest for the Quivering Bow, manipulating him and Dante into freeing their enslaved friends. The ruse had infuriated Blaze at the time, but he now found it hilarious, and related the story wherever he went to gales of laughter. He was already beginning to regard the deceit that had brought them to the Plagued Islands in the same way. Easy times were pleasant in the moment, but left little dent on the memory. It was the times when you struggled that seemed most vibrant in retrospect, the most important toward telling the story of your life. Yet they could only be good if you came out the other side intact and well. Blaze wasn't sure that this time would be the same. Late that day, the 7 towers of the Silent Spires speared towards the pregnant clouds. And none too soon. All 3 of them were drenched, nauseous from their time in the hills, and eagerly anticipating the moment they could collapse. Someone from the towers must have been watching them, Lay supposed they had damn little else to do, because their trio was met at the border of grass and trees by a host of soldiers, bearing long spears. The soldiers parted, Bel Era striding past them, the hem of her robes dampened by the rainy grass. Normally, she carried a solid dose of smugness around with her, which was probably why Dante liked her. And Blaze might have as well, except that being married seemed to clear your vision toward those who were no longer potential partners, allowing you to see in great detail the foibles you would otherwise blind yourself to as you pursued them for romantic or sexual ends. But on that afternoon, Era didn't look smug at all. She looked like she was trying not to look scared. She stopped across from Beck.
Beck? I never thought I'd see you again.
The knight bowed at the waist.
As always, Bel Era, I can't tell if you would consider that a good thing or a bad thing.
Let's just leave it as a thing.
She turned her fetching face to Gladik, then Blaze.
Where's the other warlock? The one who's so fond of demanding answers he doesn't deserve?
We should get out of the rain, Blaze said. We have a lot to talk about.
Are you afraid of the sun getting sun on you? The wind getting wind on you? What makes you afraid of a little wetness?
Dante was taken by the Aedan Rani, who turned him into a lesser lich.
Era's gaze drifted down and to the left, then snapped back to Blaze.
You saw this yourself?
You didn't, did you? Otherwise you wouldn't be alive.
We weren't there, but Dante has ways of communicating with us across distances. Warlock things, you know how it is. He told us what was happening. We haven't heard from him since. That was 4 days ago.
She reached out to the side, but there was nothing for her to hold on to.
Locked into slavery at the hands of the tyrant you were trying to cast down, and made to love every second of it. The Aedan Rani is a sadist.
Seeing her aggrievement, Blaze felt mildly bad for hitting her with it so bluntly. Then again she'd asked for it.
The good news is, Gladik can tell that Dante's still alive. Again, warlock things.
Era was already composing herself.
How did Dante let himself get taken?
I was meaning to ask the White Lich the same thing next time I saw him, but we haven't bumped into each other yet. For all I know, the Lich snuck into Era's Ossis, and knowing that Dante can't stand to lose anything, promptly challenged him to a getting kidnapped contest.
You speak nonsense like it tastes good on your tongue. But you were right about one thing. Let's get out of the rain.
She brought Blaze and Gladik to the tower they'd been staying in before.
For reasons Blaze didn't understand, which probably meant they were arbitrary customs, Beck had to go to a different tower.
Servants brought them dry jabards. They changed, then met Era on the balcony. She insisted on hearing everything that had happened since their return to the swamps, which Blaze found somewhat hypocritical. He didn't say this out loud, what with depending on her help and all, but he made a mental note to say as much to Gladik later, if only so that bit of cleverness wouldn't be lost to the world. After a few minutes, they finished their story. Era clasped her hands in front of her waist.
Is that everything?
I think it's too much as it is, Blaze said.
She scooped a small glass flower pot from the balcony and hurled it at him. He tucked his chin and covered his ear, the pot bouncing from the top of his shoulder and shattering against the wall. As she bent to pick up another pot, Blaze closed on her, threading his right arm through hers and bending it behind her back.
Hey! What is wrong with you?
She pivoted to the right, trying to extract herself from his lock, but he grabbed the collar of her robe with his right hand and her wrist with his left.
Let me go!
Era tipped her head forward. As she swung it back at his face, meaning to bash out his teeth, Blaze swept her foot from beneath her, holding tight to her robe as he guided her to the ground, but not too gently. He landed on her with just enough force to knock the wind from her, granting her half a minute of hitched breathing to think about the repercussions of her actions.
Bel Era, you appear to be upset, he said. If you'd like to explain why, I'd be happy to listen. But if you dislike my company that much, I'll be just as happy to toss you off the balcony so that you can make friends with the ground instead.
I'd let you. I'd be better off.
Her voice was tight and scratchy from the struggle to regain her breath.
Except then, I wouldn't be able to see your face when I tell you what an idiot you are.
Slowly, he removed his weight from her, unfolding his arm from hers. He got to his feet, pushing the flower pot behind him where she couldn't get at it. Era stood. Her hair and robes were disheveled, but her athlete's build and the smolder in her eyes provided her with a dignity that couldn't be taken from her if she were thrust into Jester's clothes and shoved down a muddy hill.
"You fools!" she spat. "You should have stayed in Eris Ossus!"
"To get murdered by the White Lich and my best friend? I'm sorry, but in your country, is dying pointlessly considered a virtue?"
"You still had a Knight of Odosain at your side! But you turned and ran like cowards. Are you that helpless without Dante?"
"Cowards? Helpless?
You're the ones whose fearless leader abandoned you to get ravaged by undead cannibals. We'll figure some other way to come at the Lich."
"No, you won't. You should have fought for Eris Ossus and taken your shot at the Aiden Rani. You know I can't tell you a word about how to help your friend. You came here for nothing. And now everything is lost."
Blaze furrowed his brow.
"Wait. Wait. Wait until I tell you that you can stop waiting."
"You're not pulling that figure it out for yourself crap on us right now, are you?
Maybe you don't understand since your ears only have space for what you want to hear, but that's what my faith demands of me. I can't tell you how to unblight your friend. You do have to figure it out for yourself."
"Do I, though? Because it would make so much more sense for you to simply tell me."
"You ask me to break with my faith, to give up everything I believe in."
"You're not giving it up. You're temporarily setting it aside. Or forgetting that it's there. Or overruling it for being so damn demanding. Faith is supposed to serve the people who hold it. Right now, yours is only hurting you."
Era flexed her jaw. "And if I strolled into your temple and demanded for you to forsake your gods for your own good, you'd hop right to it?
Denying the gods is great. I do it every day."
"You only deny them on things that don't matter. But what about when they tell you not to murder the innocent, or forsake your wife for other women? Is it still fun for you to defy them then?"
"Do you know how often I have to betray what I believe in? How many times I've had to kill people who didn't deserve it? How often I've hurt people because not hurting them would be even worse?"
The priestess looked him up and down. "If you betray your beliefs that freely, in what sense can you be said to hold them?"
"It's what I have to do to save lives and stave off chaos era. Even though I hate it, even though it kills me.
Just this once, be strong enough to throw aside your beliefs. Otherwise, we're all dead."
"This is a very strange argument."
Her voice was soft now, all her anger gone.
"Our beliefs are the only thing that makes us good."
Gladick bowed his head. "Then don't simply hand us the answers on a gilded plate. Rather, guide us to them, so that we might deduce them for ourselves."
"That's cheating."
"It is not as bad as it could be. To my understanding of your theology, it may even be possible to argue that it is acceptable practice, so long as you are careful in how you guide us."
"A compromise that lets me flaunt the laws that give us strength, while pretending to be a virtuous and humble servant. The two of you, I don't think, are the best of people."
"Cleric might be a sack of shit," Blaze said, "but I am a respected and well-liked figure in all kinds of different lands."
Gladick grunted.
"Only because you happen to be on the side of victory. Had you lost in the Plagued Islands, for instance, you would be seen as meddlesome warmongers whose unwanted interference caused thousands of unnecessary deaths." "To apply some
Odosane logic here. Maybe I keep winning because I'm so damn right all the time. In any event, we'll work with you on this, however it needs to be done, Era. What do you say? She moved to the balcony, resting her palms on the rain-slick railing. The bleakness of the hills rolled away before her.
I say that it isn't much of a compromise. I can deny it to the others, but I'll still know I betrayed our order.
But if you don't... Shut up! If I have to hear you say, "But we'll all die if you don't" one more time, I'll throw myself off this balcony. Yes, I'll help you. And I'll learn what it feels like to hate myself.
Blaze thought that was rather heavy on the guild, but then again, it wasn't every day that he converted someone into a heretic. He would have liked to start right away, but his body reminded him that, after the sickness of the hills, not to mention the almost total lack of sleep they'd gotten while crossing them, starting right away would ensure that he'd never be able to finish, as he would shortly drop dead. Instead, they ate, then were ushered to the same room they'd occupied before. Blaze swung his bed down from the wall, punched the mattress around, then climbed onto it.
"Funny," he said. "We were barely gone for a week. It even smells the same. But it feels so different."
Gladik shuffled to the candle made of plant wax and blew it out.
"That is because it is not the place itself that makes it feel as it does, but rather the people who are there with you in it. And many of our people are now gone."
"Doesn't it ever get tiring?"
"What is that?"
"Looking at everything through shit-colored lenses."
Gladik didn't answer right away.
"Sometimes it is exhausting. But at least, and for the first time in my life, I think I might be seeing the truth."
Blaze rolled over and slept. He dreamed of a figure in a black cloak breaking through the hell-painted hills, a storm of darkness in each hand, and a smile on his face. The figure was just as he'd always been, except the face was wrong, so pale and more gaunt even than Gladik, without the slightest trace of mercy. Blaze tried to draw his swords, but they felt glued into their sheaths. Clouds of shadows blocked out the sun, streaming across the sky as if they were erasing it. He might have tried to run, but he knew there was no point. After all of the tedious morning wake-up business, the Tenarians, being savages, declined to serve any kind of liquor with breakfast. Era brought Blaze and Gladik to the edge of the field, downwind from the Seven Spires. She was alone, and looked like she hadn't slept more than half the night.
"What are you staring at?" she said croakily. "Let's get on with this before I change my mind."
"Right," Blaze said. "I guess we should start with the biggie. Is there a way to undo getting turned into a lich?"
"How would I know?"
"You said you knew how to cure being blighted."
"Spinning gods, do you even listen to yourself? Or do you just let the words fall from you, like animals fertilizing the fields with their own waste?"
"Let me guess. The blighted, by virtue of being blighted, are not the same thing as being a lich."
"Very good. If you've got that down, maybe you're ready to explain to me why a rake isn't the same thing as a swamp dragon."
"But liches and blighted aren't that different. From what I've seen, they're actually pretty similar. Maybe reversing the two conditions is like being a physician, where if you can cure the red fever, then you can cure green fever as well."
"I don't know about your disgusting northern poxes, but I get the point. You're probably correct.
The way you remove the lichness from somebody is probably similar to, or the same as,